Welcome to Office Hours with Adam Peterson, where I talk to business owners, employees, entrepreneurs and experts to find answers to those day-to-day questions about life and work in Luxembourg. If you have questions you'd like answered, let me know at adam.peterson@rtl.lu or on LinkedIn. But for now, on to today's show. Luxembourg's 10th Art Week coincided with Series 1 of Office Hours. At that time, Charlotte Leroy from Artwork Circle answered the questions of how a gallery chooses artists, who sets the price for art, and whether I would be welcomed at a vernissage if I am not always going to buy. So I thought it'd only be right to talk to artists themselves, and I'm delighted to have two in the studio. The man who taught me the English word for vernissage is opening. Fletch, welcome Fletch to the show.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me.
And someone I've been looking forward to meeting for a long time, so Uwe Noser Odia, who goes by his initials Uno. So welcome, Uwe.
Thank you very much for having me.
So let's get started and hear a little bit about your backstory. So, Fletcher, how did you become an artist and end up in Luxembourg?
Two different questions for me. But the how I became an artist, I guess you would say it was a relatively organic process, something I've always done is drawing and painting and made things.
So when you were at school, you're always drawing pictures, art at school. And did you study art, do a degree in art?
Yeah, exactly that, yeah. It was a toss-up for a minute as whether I wanted to go join the Marines or go to art school.
I think you made the right decision for sure. And then, so you went to art, and then straight after university, you then became an artist, right?
Yeah. I moved to Australia straight after university, so I kind of struggled again to begin my art career over there. So,
and when did you realize you could make it as an artist and make a living as an artist?
I'm still trying to figure that out, actually.
And then from Australia to Luxembourg, how did that connection kind of work?
Yeah, that was essentially an opportunity presented itself to move to Luxembourg, and I thought it might be interesting to kind of to live in that European culture, get some exposure to the European art scene, because I hadn't really had much exposure to that in the past.
So you grew up about 5 miles away from me. So you're from Solihull near Birmingham, right? And I'm from Sutton Coldfield.
Oh, really? Sorry,
you're probably a Blues fan, but anyway, we'll move on from that. And when did you arrive in Luxembourg then?
Yeah, 2013.
And Uwe, so I'm going to, before I move to you, I'm just going to tell a little anecdote. I once did an audit, and I turned up this audit and I said, "Hi, I'm Adam Peterson, I'm an operations engineer." And the guy after me, he introduced himself and said, "Hi, I'm Jim Weatherby. I'm a space shuttle commander." And at that moment, no one wanted to talk to me. So I've kind of set you up, Fletch. So, Uwe, how does someone go from being shot in the head twice and left for dead in Nigeria to Luxembourg? Talk me through that.
Well, I think after I survived that, it was obvious to me that I needed to leave my country and I had to flee. You know, but yeah, first I moved to the east of Europe for studies. And I think after about a year, it was clear to me that I couldn't live there, really. I couldn't make a life there. And I think moving to Luxembourg to me was a bit of a boring story because I wanted to live in Europe. I just thought it's closer to Africa. And much of the culture that we practice today in Africa, you know, we call it the modern culture, it's really from Europe. I wanted to be in a place where I could easily reach out to every other place in many countries. Yeah, but for Luxembourg, it was more of I wanted to go to a place where I didn't know anybody and no one knows me.
Wow.
So I wanted to move to a place where I could start afresh, you know, just start anew. And yeah.
And when did you start your art journey along that though? So were you an artist when you were living in Nigeria, or have you recently become an artist?
The art story for me, it's always been there. I was an artist, I think I would say, from the moment I could do things, you know. Mm-hmm. So from a childhood, it was quite organic. And being raised in Benin City, where just about every house you go to, there's some sculptures. And so it was there. So I learned to sculpt quite early. And then I moved on to, when it was time to go to study in university, I studied painting and general art. So right after then, yeah, I did art, but then I also got a job in the banking sector, in the microfinance sector. So art and work was always a thing for me.
I did not know you had a side hustle microfinance. Normally it's the finance people have a side hustle with art, right? But you're the other way, you're an artist with a side hustle in microfinance.
I think we can say it like that,
Excellent. And so let's pull on those stories a little bit. So you arrived in Luxembourg, I think, 2017.
Yeah, that's right.
And then, if my research is correct, you set up Let's Art just 2 years later. So you'd only really arrived in Luxembourg in 2017, within 2 years. So tell me, what is Let's Art?
Okay, so after I got here and I got a job to work for a non-profit organization helping third country nationals to set up businesses in Luxembourg. It's kind of like inclusive entrepreneurship.
Yeah, I had Bernard Ndolo on the earlier series, and he said when he first arrived to Luxembourg as a third country national, it's actually quite difficult. So this is trying to help those people, that talented entrepreneurs that are arriving, and helping them start their businesses, etc.
Yeah, so I was working for this organization called Touchpoints, and I thought, okay, while I'm doing this corporate job, I was doing a lot of exhibition. I started exhibiting my work quite early. I think 6 months after I arrived here, I participated in my first exhibition. And subsequently, I just every other year, maybe 2, maybe 10, maybe 15, both solo and then group shows. And then I realized that entering the traditional art scene in Luxembourg was quite difficult for third country nationals. I thought, why not create the opportunity for more people to be able to exhibit, you know, in Luxembourg, if they live in Luxembourg and they're not Luxembourgish. So Let's Art started as a way of creating access to every other person who is not traditionally or who weren't born here.
And my understanding is the support and like the House of Entrepreneurship kind of helped. Right. So there were the quite good systems within Luxembourg that helped you solve that problem.
That's right. So I got started, and first it was mainly cultural integration. But last year the opportunity came because I had left the company I was working for, the non-profit I was working for, they closed. And then I set up the old projects, the core activities we were holding with Touchpoint, and decided to create a project with it, which is called Tricode, but hosted under Let's Art. Mm. So currently Let's Art is not just creating exhibition opportunities for people, it's also helping third country nationals get started in their entrepreneurship journey in Luxembourg. So in that regard, I'm working with the House of Entrepreneurship in the Chamber of Commerce, and I've got support and financial support from the state in the form of, for instance, we have support from the Ministry of Economy, and we are in discussion with the Ministry of Works.
A fantastic initiative that you've set up so quickly after coming to Luxembourg. So Fletch, your integration into the kind of the art scene here, I saw one of your pieces at the National Gallery of History of Art in Luxembourg. So
the National Museum.
And I visited actually your studio. There was an open day in Diffidange. And as we were chatting, I don't know if you remember, but we got interrupted by Mr. Xavier Bettel, who kind of walked in and said, "Hey, Fletch, good to see you again." So tell me about kind of your integration into the Luxembourg establishment and how your picture ends up being in the National Gallery.
The picture ended up in the National Gallery because I had a show in Luxembourg in Nussbaum Reding Projects. So Nussbaum Reding has two sides to its gallery, let's say, one where it represents its main stable of artists, and then a bit more of an artist-run initiative, like where they give opportunities to up-and-coming artists to exhibit, right? So I was having a show there in 2022. Yeah. And I guess it was just luck that Ruud Priem, the director of the museum, saw the work, liked the work, and wanted to purchase.
And your studio down in Diffidange then, is that... There was a bunch of studios down there. Seems like a really vibrant place where people get to collaborate, music, all sorts of things going on. Is that some state involvement? Do the government support that? How does that work?
Yeah, so that was kind of... I kind of landed on my feet with that as well, to be honest, right? Because I turned up in Luxembourg in 2013 and from Melbourne, didn't really know the scene at all, didn't really know anybody at all. So I kind of was like, okay, I need to kind of find out some questions. So I actually went to the casino in town, right? And I just spoke to the girls working behind the counter there, and I said, "Listen, I'm an artist. I just landed fresh off the boat from Melbourne, and I'm just wondering, like, where do people buy their like art materials from? Like, where could I get a studio?" And And yeah, they were kind enough to tell me about, first of all, about Bursna, because I didn't know about Bursna, so I could get more materials from here. And that, yeah, that there was this project being made and built down in Diffidange, where they're like converting an old steel factory into these creative spaces. So they gave me a phone number, Tanya Brugnoni at the time. It was her project. She set it up. So I gave her a call, told her my story. And she's like, yeah, come on down. We'll have a chat, see what's going on. And when I turned up, it was a huge building site. Like, there was still...
just a shell.
Yeah.
Bits of steel lying everywhere.
And they were like, yeah, look at this. This could be yours one day. This, like, rubble and stuff. Needs paint. Well, I'm like, oh, great. Yeah. So, but it was. It was good. Actually, it was great spaces. And yeah, and so I was lucky enough to get one of the first spaces there. And I've been there ever since, basically. Not in the same space. I've moved into different spaces as I've needed more. But yeah, but the good thing about this place is all the different people that you get to work with. Like, there's photographers and architects and designers, and yeah, from all different kinds of backgrounds with crazy stories. Nothing as crazy as being shot in the head twice, but still some crazy stories. And yeah, and that led from, yeah, one connection to another, one opportunity to another. It's a cool place. It's a good, vibrant place.
So just before we move to the brand, I'm going to ask you another question. So one of my theories in life is that people who work in business and so on actually pick up a salary every month, and it's quite easy. Where artists who may not consider themselves business people have to be entrepreneurial, because if you don't sell your pieces, you don't put food on the table fundamentally. So how do you consider yourselves? Do you consider yourselves... like 100% artist, mixed between the two? What percent business person, entrepreneur, do you feel you are?
Yeah, well, I think I consider myself more of an artist than anything else, because even while I walk on the other side of the aisle, the colors come in, you know. I think the approach in which I also do the corporate thing, it's more artistic than ever, right? So I would consider myself more as an artist than anything else.
But do you spend time purposely doing sales and marketing for your stuff, walking the streets, going out, talking to galleries?
Yeah, I think I've realized that being an artist is really not only about creating the art. Yes, that's a big part of it, but you have to let people get to know you, not just you knowing people. There's a whole lot of networking involved. And for me, that's the aspect that I think is a bit more business-like, right?
Yeah, and the networking, sales and marketing.
More, yeah, I find it a little bit more boring, but then I try to approach it more artistically, right? Yeah. So, yeah, it's going out there to network, attending events. I often tell people that I somehow enjoy other people's exhibition a little bit more than I do mine, because there is no responsibility, right? I'm not going to stand and be telling, you know, people about every piece of art and every piece of stroke in the painting. I just go there and I enjoy it. So I get to talk with people about every other thing else than my painting or my art.
And the same kind of question for you, Fletch. So you did a degree in art.
Yeah.
Did they have any sales and marketing, how to brand yourself, how to network in that course?
Not really. Like, there was a small section. I remember going to like two or three lectures on how to price work, how to approach galleries, how to put together maybe portfolios or resumes, etc., like this, but it was minimal. Right,
perfect. So what we'll do, we've learned about your background, how you come to Luxembourg, and then we've just got to some of the chewier questions. So let's take a quick break and then we'll get back and we'll talk about how it works with price, galleries, and some of the other issues around the business of art. So welcome back. And in part one, we met Uwe and Fletch and heard about their backgrounds. And just at the end of part one, we started talking about price. Now, I've only ever negotiated my price, I think, three times in my life. Once when I was a squash coach as a student, and then when I joined Amazon, and when I joined the Luxembourg School of Business. And in each occasion, I think I did a bad job and they got a better deal than me. How do you price your art? And is it a strength of yours as artists?
Now, it's not something I personally need to worry about. I don't concern myself with it so much anymore. In the beginning, before representation, before galleries were on the scene, this is when it was more my role. And then really, there was all kinds of methods you try, like, oh, I spent this many hours on it, but it didn't make sense because each piece seemed to want to equate to a different amount of money. So simply as I can put it is I'd look around at people who are at a similar point as me in the art world, see what kind of size and price they were selling their work for, and I'd pitch it at about the same price.
So kind of a bit of competitor analysis would be the business term for it.
Like, and this, then, yeah, like my work's better than his, so mine should be more expensive. Like a bit like
this. Your business, yours is the best work in the world.
Of course it is. Sorry, you probably didn't know that, mate. But yeah, so it was a bit of this. It's a bit like you kind of pitch it. And then when I started working with the gallery, then the gallery decided like, oh, these prices are too cheap based off what we think, so we're going to put them up to this, and then it went like that. So.
Yeah, it's interesting because when I interviewed Charlotte in series one from My Work Circle, she was saying they let the artist set the price, but you're actually getting advice from the gallery.
Yeah,
how does that work with you, Uwe?
Yeah, I think for me it goes both ways. If it's been sold in an exhibition with a gallery, often they've got a percentage they take. So before that happens, I tell them my base price. And how do I set the base price? I determine that based on the last work I sold, as well as what's the trending price in the market, what's the market price at that moment, you know, and then how much of work have I invested in the particular piece, you know. So it's a bit of, you know, comparison.
Yeah, and do you ever get those situations where you sell a piece, and I'll make up some numbers, you know, maybe a small piece, a big piece. You sell a piece for €500, let's say, and then a year later you see it going in auction for 2,000. You think, oh my God, what have I done? I should have charged more. Do you see your art on the secondary market, and how does that work? Do you get any benefit for that?
You can do if it goes to auction, like particularly in certain circles in certain countries, then you get you've got royalties on that, so you get a percentage of the secondary art prices.
But that's only in some countries, is it? Not all.
Yeah. So like, and you have to like be on a register, and if it's in the right auction houses, etc., like this, then yeah, you'll get a small percentage. It's more kickback for the work. So yeah, okay. It's not the same as the gallery commission, but it's still something.
Yeah, well, I think for me, I've never had that experience yet. But generally, when I sell, I think part of the agreement I have with the buyer, it's often I retain my first right of refusal. I'd like to acquire my work first if I can, right? And generally, too, when I paint, I often create series, right? I always preserve a couple for myself, my family, and my estate.
So that first right of refusal, is that on the price you sold it to them for?
Well, the first price of refusal is a matter of, okay, when are you selling it? If you're selling it in 20 years or in 5 years, it's definitely not going to be the same price. Because even for the works I sold maybe 5 or 4 years ago are a lot less expensive than the work I would sell today.
Yeah.
So I expect that to also happen when anyone decides to sell the work that they bought from me some time ago. So whatever the price is at any point in time, which I think would always be reasonable. Yeah, if I can afford it, I'd like to have it.
You renegotiate it.
Yeah.
So you need to be, you know, you're kind of artists, not business people, but you're probably watching like interest rates and things, those, because that's going to affect the resale price and all that.
I guess, And I think I've also had a client ask if I could take back and recreate another, you know, and then we'll see if there's a price difference, you know, because it wasn't a portrait, I'll call it an abstract portraiture, but their family has expanded since then, and they would like to have even a bigger one than they took the first time.
So you were commissioned to paint a family, and then they had another member of the family. Excellent.
Yeah, that's right.
And you've touched on it, they're a gallery, so I don't really understand how the relationship with galleries works. So I'm aware of your work being in two different galleries. So Fletcher's at Nosbaum Reading, they've got a place, I think it's next to the National History Art thing, near, not too far from Urban. Everyone knows where Urban is.
Yeah, Fishmarkt, I think, is the official name of it.
Yeah, so that's in Oakville. And then, Uwe, I'm aware of your work being at the Camel Boutique, which is this madly painted house in the middle of a housing estate in Esch, which is like not in Oakville for sure. So it's this weird, you must have a weird relationship where if I go to Nosbaum Reading, I'm going to pay a price. But if I come to you and buy direct, then you're going to get a bigger cut. So you've got this weird relationship where you're a competitor, but you need each other. They need your art. You need their... How does that work?
Yeah. Well, with a good gallery, which I can say with Alex and Nosbaum Reading, it's a good relationship. So it's in our best interests to work well together. So I would rather people work with Alex and go through him, because what he does in regards to taking the work to fairs and promoting and certain write-ups and critiques does a lot more than the extra few thousand I might make selling the painting out of the studio, if that makes sense.
I guess it comes back to what we're talking about in part one, is that if you consider yourself an artist, you're effectively outsourcing that then to the gallery. So the gallery's doing all the negotiation, they're doing the price selling, they're doing the sales and, you know, the sales and marketing for you. So why would you cut out your own sales and marketing?
Exactly.
It would be very short term.
Exactly this, yeah. It's a bit short-sighted, that approach. It really is a relationship. So I want that relationship to go well. I want it to last a long time. I want it to grow as hopefully he grows. So it's a bit this. It's a bit of a reciprocal thing.
Great. And tell me a bit about the Camel Boutique, because it's an exciting place down there.
Yeah, that's right. And just to add to what you were saying too, we must all understand that owning a gallery comes with a whole lot of costs, right? They're businesses, so it's something every artist must learn to put up with. But of course, we don't want to work with galleries that are, you know, demanding extraordinary commissions from any work they sell. But generally speaking, I think for myself, I've always worked with galleries that are fair, and also they come with a whole lot of network, right? They come with their network, and whatever goes through the galleries, to me, an addition to whatever I can do for myself. So yeah, it's a fair thing. And then with the Camele Boutique, and as well as any other gallery I've worked with, there's always been commission, but very fair commission. So I'm happy to do this. They print the invitations, they send out a whole lot of publicity materials, which they often do on their cost, right?
And the Camele Boutique, was that set up by artists?
Yes, it's an artist-inspired place, yeah.
Yeah, if you get a chance to get down there, I highly recommend people do it. It is in the middle of a housing estate. You think you're getting lost in Esh, and then you see this wacky house that's itself now a piece of art with some great art inside.
And just to say very quickly, you know, the Camele Boutique in Luxembourgish, that means the sweets shop. The shop for sweets. So you see the logo too. It's like the sweets.
I thought candies.
Yeah,
I thought it was a camel. Shop. I thought it was like the camel that walks around the desert with his water on the back.
Candy shop.
There we go.
Yeah, that's why you see all the beautiful colors in there. So it's a lovely day.
So
we
were talking before the show. So you're now a Luxembourgish citizen. So you now speak the language. So thank you for teaching me the Luxembourgish language when it comes to sweet shop.
How long has it been open? Actually, the Camel Boutique.
I think it opened in 2020. Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
I think
2020 or so.
What year was Esh Art, Esh Year of Culture?
That was 2022.
2020, yeah. I went in 2022 was when I went, just after the pandemic.
Yeah, I had a project with them for the Esh 2022 or so. Yeah, so it was before this time. That probably even 2019, I think they started in 2019, because it was better that commissioned it. No, and he was the Prime Minister at the time.
So I probably saw your work there without realising it was you. So I'm glad to meet you a few years later. One last thing I kind of want to touch on. So your branding. So when people buy the piece of art, do you think they're really buying the art, or how much are they buying your personal story as well? So both of you have had some difficult things. I mean, if I think about the art I've bought, sometimes it's the piece of art, but it's also the story of the artist and what it means to me that sits behind it. Do you think about your personal branding, your art? Do you think people are saying, hey, I bought this piece of art and it's supporting someone who was shot twice in the head and left for dead, or support someone, Fletch, I know last year or the year before you had health issues and cancer, and you've now, great news, kind of recovered from that. But do you feel your own personal story is part of the value of your art, or is it just the pictures themselves?
Yeah, I'd say definitely that. Your work, if it's done well, I'd say, in my personal opinion, if your work's done well, it speaks directly to your relationship with living, with life. So your story is inseparable somehow from the work that you're making, as public or as private as you want to make that. It's going to show itself in the work. So I think this story is important. These life events are hugely relevant to the works that are being made by the artist.
Yeah,
I totally agree with that. Yeah, my works are speaking about myself too, and of course the stories that I've had to experience, not often about the violence, no, but sometimes I think, okay, like right now I'm doing Masks and Masquerades, which will show in, you know, the gallery in Esch. It's still about the stories that I've experienced in life. So I think people buy or they take these walks because it's different. It's not a story that another person could have told. And I realized, too, that a lot of people can paint, right? Even those who acquire art, they can paint, right? But they're not painting for themselves. They rather get something from an artist. And I think part of my collector's motivation to take walks from me is because it's from Uno. It's from Uyi, you know. So, yeah, the stories cannot be separated from the colors you see. Yeah.
And when I had Charlotte on an artwork circle in Series 1, I put a piece on RTL Today. So it's still on the website. If you go at the top, there's a tab opinion and search down there to November. And my view is that art, one reason art is really valuable, better than a Rolex watch or a Tesla, is the emotional connection you have with it. You know, my wife bought a Natasha bought a piece when her mother passed away, and every time she sees that piece, it reminds her of a relationship with her mother. So I would recommend people to get out there and buy art. It is something you will value for the rest of your life, and if anything, appreciates in value, even if it's emotional value, not necessarily financially, but it appreciates in emotional value as opposed to just the financial value. Excellent. It's been an absolute pleasure, a lot of fun, and an honour to have you both on the show. I've got one last question for both of you. So let's start with Uri. If people want to get in contact with you and see your work, what's the best way?
Every other time there's an exhibition going on for me. They can, for instance, right now, see some of my work at the Hôpital Robert Schumann in Kirchberg, the first floor gallery. And from the 29th of January, I'll have another group of works exhibited at the gallery of the Theatre d'Esch in Esch. Otherwise, they can always check on my website. It's artbyuno.com.
And then your Instagram, you're quite active as well. So Instagram is artbyuno?
That's right, artbyuno.
And same question to you, Fletch.
Yeah, for me, if you want, I just had a show open yesterday at Nussbaum Reading Gallery. So that'll be on through the month. Until March. Also, there's the website is jkbfletcher.art, and the Instagram is jkbf.studio if they want to check it out. And yeah, normally message me on.
So this episode should be going out on the 17th of January. So yesterday was from the 16th of January. If you're listening to it on the podcast version, then yesterday may be a different day. Thank you again so much, and I just want to say thank you very much to the listener. So that's it for today's episode. If you have feedback and questions on this topic or any other, drop me a line at adam.peterson@rtl.lu or on LinkedIn.